Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody. And I have some bad news. I'm sorry to say, because I know many people were looking forward to hearing from him, that our planned interview guest, Peter Fajkowski, co-author of Climate Restoration, will not be joining us today. Yesterday, Peter let me know that something came up at the last minute and he couldn't do the interview. So, I am now very pleased and proud to say that Dr. Richard Nolthinius has graciously agreed to fill in. I have known Rick for many years, and what he has to say is always brilliant. Therefore, today, we will be talking about climate chaos, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Hi, Rick. How are you doing today? And thank you so much for being my interviewee at the last minute.
Oh, thank you, Jill. Well, I got in my bike ride, so I feel mentally
energized. Good.
And put together some notes here. So,
Yay.
Yeah, I hope we can make this educational.
Good. Well, you know, I did, before I got started, before I introduced you, I wanted to say that you were my very first guest on Be Bold America.
That's right.
Back in February 17th, 2019. And we talked about why are we so angry? And I was terrible because it was my very first time I ever did a radio show, but you were terrific.
Well, thank you. It's my first radio show. Well, not my first, but one of my first.
One of your first. Well, now it's been over 4 years, so I've gotten a little better, but...
Well, your show has been taking off. It's been syndicated around the world
it
now.
Is.
This is great.
Yeah. Thank you. So, Rick, why don't I introduce you now?
Okay.
You are the astronomy program chair at Cabrillo College, and in the past 10 years, you have added climate science to your expertise and created and began teaching a comprehensive course in climate science and its civilization context. By examining the climate science problem and searching for solutions, you have found it is connected fundamentally to, well, everything. You are also a member of the University of California, Santa Cruz, Earth Futures Institute. In addition, Rick, you are also a contributing multi-chapter author to Climate Abandon. We're on the endangered species list. Welcome to Be Bold America, Rick.
I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, first, before we get started on the good, bad, and the ugly of the climate chaos, I did want to share that the UN report released last month, what it said, just briefly, some of the alarming sentences. The report stated that, quote, climate change is speeding toward catastrophe, and that the pace and scale of what has been done so far and current plans are insufficient to tackle climate change. We are walking when we should be sprinting. And I also recently heard a climate scientist say that every tenth of a degree is worth fighting for. We have big things to do. So, Rick, that was a lot of ugly, but why don't you kick us off with some good? Tell us about UCSC's Earth Futures Institute.
Oh, yes. So, Sandy Faber, who I've known for many, many years, probably 30 years now, and we've collaborated on some interesting papers, actually even thermodynamic-related papers, if you think of stars as molecules. a strange thought, but in fact, there is a parallel there. She credits conversations with me, actually, for helping motivate her to start the Earth Futures Institute.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah. Well, she's retired now, but not retired from working. She's just retired from teaching courses and so forth. So she's emeritus, and she's looking for valuable places to put her talents, and she decided this was it. It's a nation institute, but I read the details of it, and I said, this is perfect. This is spot on what we need. We need an interdisciplinary approach to try and solve climate, because it's really not, the solutions are not going to be there from specialists. It's going to be there from the very few, unfortunately, very few people who are interdisciplinary in nature and can put together a picture of the whole thing. And now, I do want to, while I'm on that subject, I need to hand out kudos to who I think is the best at that in the whole world, and that's Nate Higgins. So if you've not heard of Nate Higgins.
Yes, who is Nate Higgins?
Well, he is described as a, you know, it's hard to describe him because he does everything. He's a futurist. He's a podcaster, so he has a great podcast, a great simplification. He interviews people every day almost, incredible people, long interviews. And Nate and myself and a few others are the people I can think of off the top of my head who are actually trying to put together what is the real human dilemma and the reason that specialists don't get anywhere. Specialists don't get anywhere because they don't realize the full dimensions. It's connected to everything. Climate change is really just a symptom of a much larger problem. And unless you understand that larger problem, we're not going to make any progress. And of course, we haven't made any progress. Okay, so back to EFI. So EFI is it's a small institute at the moment. We're looking for more funding. We did have Nate out, actually, a few weeks ago to give a talk, which was very well received, and it was excellent, as always. We have sponsored a number of talks. In fact, I've given 4 talks at EFI now, 3 of them on the economics of climate change.
What's the mission?
Well, the mission is to transition our way to a sustainable Earth, a long-term sustainable Earth. So Sandy's initial thought was, well, if we look at the astronomical things it could do us in, they only happen over timescales of 100 million years. So we could be a civilization for 100 million years if we were just smarter. Unfortunately, what we've done is used our smarts to basically rape and pillage the Earth at a rate that is, we won't even make it through the next century if we continue on the path that we're on. We're growing at a rate of 2% a year, and if you do the math, you realize that means there is a new copy of every building, every road, every person, every everything on the same finite Earth, powered by the same dilute ultimate energy source, which is sunlight. It can't continue. We're already using up almost 2 Earths worth of sustainability.
Now, I heard that the sustainable level of population on the planet is about 6.5 billion people.
And a six and a half billion
people.
No.
No. Correct me, because I was going to make the point that we just went over 8 billion.
Right. We're adding a billion every 13 years.
Yes. This is obviously unsustainable and very quickly unsustainable.
Yeah. No, I think it's closer to 1 billion.
Really?
Or under a billion. Actually, Sandy thinks it's under a billion.
Oh, my. Oh, dear.
No, you have to ask, what are your values? So you have, when you say sustainable Earth, of course, it depends on what is it that you want to sustain. Mm-hmm. So are we talking about bare survival in a soylent green world, or are we talking about a world that we actually want to wake up to each morning? And if we talk about the latter, then yes, it's a much smaller number. Mm. It's a much smaller. So could we last a little longer at 6.5 billion instead of 8 billion? Yeah, we could last a little longer, but is that sustainable?
No.
We're already past tipping points.
Yes.
For the Amazon rainforest, for the permafrost thaw. And once you cross tipping points, you can't go back.
We're getting into the ugly. Is there still some good that we can talk about?
Well, I guess I tend to go there. People,
no, that's all right. We'll get there.
Tell me that, yeah.
There's so much. But I did want to just talk about the good. Another thing I heard was that solar and wind is a more affordable or economical now than coal as an energy source. Is that correct?
Not really.
Oh, that's not a good.
Ultimately, of course, we will depend on solar energy because the sun is essentially inexhaustible. The problem is that solar so far has gotten a big boost up because it's using the grid as its storage and because it's a tiny fraction of our total energy. So you can have it be variable and get away with it. But if you really want solar as your prime source, you're going to need way more storage. And the kind of storage that we've been talking about uses rare metals. Now there's thoughts for how we can perhaps reduce that. Using gravity assist also for, that's probably the wrong word, that's an astrophysical term.
gravity astronomy storage. Chair, you have those terms, right?
Yeah, so pump water up into reservoirs and then let it come back down, then run through turbines and heaven. And that's reasonably efficient. On that subject, though, imagine that we've known about that for well over 100 years, and yet it makes up only a tiny fraction of our storage. So why is that?
Why is that?
Well, obviously, because it's more expensive than what we want to do, which is just keep mining more. Mm-hmm. It's also limited geographically. We're going to have to pay a lot more for whatever energy we get. So ultimately, we will go to solar. But here's the problem with solar. It arrives very dilute, and there's nothing you can do about that.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that the amount of sunlight reaching the ground is only a matter of a couple hundred watts per square meter, and you can't change that. How are you going to gather it? Well, you're going to need heavy, expensive solar panels supported by aluminum, supported by copper wires that then route it from where it is collected to where it might be used. And those are all rare and getting rarer, and the ability to mine lower and lower grade ores, goes up exponentially. There was a nice paper by Mark Mills recently that talked about this. So the rate at which we're going to have to spend for energy is going to go up exponentially. Of course, nobody wants to hear that. They want to hear, oh, well, solar's now cheaper and we're on our way. But if you want to support a world such as that we already have, I don't see how we're going to do it, not with just solar. I actually favor, as a much less ecologically damaging energy source, one of two possibilities. So number one is molten salt thorium breeder reactors, which can not only burn up the...
Are those not nuclear reactors?
They're nuclear, yes, nuclear reactors.
Yes, I thought so.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, people
panic.
They have this knee-jerk reaction, mm-hmm. and they hold up their fingers, you know, the devil. Mm-hmm. But it's actually not. It's and, in fact, some of the people who try to lambast nuclear are the fossil fuel people, because they regard nuclear as competition.
As a threat.
It is. But, in fact, if you look at the deaths, you look at the damage, you look at the amount of waste, it's minuscule. If you compare that to what we would need for a fully solar-powered world, you're talking about millions and millions of square miles turned into what the industry wants to do, which is utility-grade solar, because it's cheaper. You imagine putting it all on your rooftops, but that's far more expensive than utility-grade solar.
So I'm getting the sense that there isn't very much good out there.
Well,
it's a good time to break. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. Our topic today is climate chaos, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we're speaking with Dr. Richard Nolthenius, astronomy program chair at Cabrillo College in Santa Cruz and invited presenter at the UCSC Earth Futures Institute. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Hello, K-Squid listeners. I'm Tom Hartman, and each weekday at 4 p.m., I bring you a different perspective on the news than you're likely to hear on most media outlets. Please join me on KSQD Santa Cruz, your ink spot on the dial for the Tom Hartman program, heard now for the first time ever in the Monterey Bay Area at 90.7 FM, weekdays at 4 p.m. That's Progressive Talking Conversation with me, Tom Hartman, weekdays at 4 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM. Tag, you're it.
We're back. Would you like a friend to hear this amazing interview, Climate Chaos, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly? Well, Be Bold America is available as a podcast that is pushed out to 10 podcast platforms. Subscribe for free from your favorite podcast platforms such as Apple, Google, Spotify, Radio Public, and more. And Be Bold America's podcast is now pushed out to YouTube. Now, Rick, we were starting to get into the bad, but let me just hand it over to you. What are some key things you want us to know?
Well, one thing that I would like to get across is probably the prime thing that we need to do is educate people. Educate on how civilization works. Right now, we're basically being played, I think, by corporate interests that are wanting to make sure we keep business as usual because, of course, that's where their profits come from. And I want to draw a distinction here between the two different, very different motivational structures for what runs our society and scientists. Scientists actually have created a system whereby their motivational system favors getting it right by Mother Nature. Because if we don't get it right, somebody else, some other scientist, is going to point it out. And you're going to look like the fool as a scientist, because you can't fool Mother Nature. I know it's a commercial jingle, but you know what? It's true. Ultimately, it comes in. And so we create scientific societies, and we're members of those societies, and we create journals that publish those, and we want our journals to stay high quality. And that means we have referees who read our papers and try and find any weaknesses, and they point them out to the authors, and the authors fix them. And then the editors say, yes, this looks good now, and they publish it. That's different than trade journals, which are put out by corporations. Corporations' charters say, no, we are maximizing return on investment. That is their goal. Now, I'm not saying that corporations are evil and immoral. I'm not. I'm saying that they are amoral. In other words, morality doesn't enter the equation when it comes to their actions. What they do may be moral, it may be good, or it may be bad.
Well, I have an additional thing when we talk about corporations, because they talk about corporations being people, even though it's a contracted construct that we've made. But if a corporation's a person, then they're a psychopath. Okay. They have no compassion, they have no humility, and they have no empathy. They are amoral. So I find that you can't expect any rational response from a corporation other than feeding its stockholders and feeding its coffers.
Yeah, it's what they do. And I think the best parallel for corporations is the Terminator. Hmm. Now, the Terminator was not evil. He was a machine. He was programmed. And he's extremely efficient. Capitalism's extremely efficient. And he's single-minded. And he's very good at what he does. And the trucks and the homes and the people have gotten in the way. It wasn't that he was out to hurt them. They just got in the way. And in the same sense, the Earth is just getting in the way of corporations' prime number one motivational goal, which is increasing profits. Now, you might think, well, but we could have green profits. We could have green growth, Rick. I mean, really, I've heard it so many times on the radio that we could have just green growth. Let me explain something that the academics have found, the scientists have found, and this I credit with somebody I met. Well, actually, I haven't met him yet, but someone whose work I read years ago, who I've become fascinated with, and that's Tim Garrett, who is a cloud physicist at the University of Utah. And he discovered this interesting relationship that shows that the current rate of consumption of primary energy, in other words, the energy supplied by Mother Nature, is directly proportional to the sum total of all past real GDP, real production. As long as we keep adding to real production, as long as our net production stays positive year by year, we are encumbering ongoing future needed energy. And the Earth simply can't support that. Now, you might say, well, we have. Yeah, we have, but we've been doing it by debt that is encumbering our children and our grandchildren, and just in terms of financials. But it is also encumbering the Earth itself. And as we continue to do that, the Earth gets less and less sustainable. In other words, its ability to process the waste and damage that we do lessens and lessens, at the same time that our impacts on Earth are rising. So the difference between those curves keeps growing. Just in the time that I've been working in climate, the last 13 years, it's gone from about 1.4 Earths to about 1.7 Earths worth of sustainability that we're using up. So I had to I had to smile when I heard you say that the UN is saying that we're walking when we should be sprinting. And I'm saying, no, we're not walking.
Not even walking.
We're certainly not walking forwards.
We're crawling. Yeah. Well, also, if anyone listening wants to know more about the Garrett relation, you did a Wikipedia page on it, correct? So there's a Garrett...
See what you did, Jill?
What?
You got me started.
I did.
Okay, here we go.
So more people can know more about that relation.
You can't read it on the Wikipedia.
You can't anymore?
No, it lasted for a little while until a couple of economists spotted it.
Okay.
And then the economist said to the Wikipedia police, we don't know this guy. We never heard of him. And I think you should just remove this article. He's probably just a stooge for Tim Garrett. Maybe it's even Tim Garrett himself.
And you couldn't appeal that?
I did appeal it.
You did?
And I said, you know what? I've never actually met Tim Garrett.
How can I be a stooge if I don't know him?
Yeah, and there's certainly no financial, you know, back scratching going on here in either direction. I became fascinated with his work because it's such an incredible thing that you could put into modeling that the economists like to do, which doesn't include all the incredible physics that physicists like to do, but yet which could have, it hasn't yet, but could have some realism to it.
Well, I'm sorry people can't read more about it then on Wikipedia.
No, this is the thing. I used to love Wikipedia, and now my feelings about it are totally different because what the Wikipedia police did is they just took it off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my reason for putting in that article was to include especially a criticisms section.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the way good science is done. Put in a criticism section, and if you economists think that this is wrong, show me why. Put it in so that everybody can understand this. I mean, Tim has many papers on this subject that have passed peer review and gotten into quality journals. So this is not just bogus nonsense. And yet they simply took it out. It just hammered into me how this society works. There is nothing more unpopular that I can find than this relationship, because it says the only way to go back into sustainability is we have to degrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a dirty word. Like, nobody, progressives, Republicans, nobody wants
everybody wants
to
growth,
consider.
Growth,
everybody
more
wants growth. Right. If you're progressive, you want green growth. If you're progressive, you want to make sure the Africans are just as wealthy as the Europeans. And they don't like to hear that, no, we've grown far past our ability to support a real Earth.
Well, we certainly learned the bad about Wikipedia there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry to say that. So you can't find it. But you can find all of my work on my website. So now here's something. The school seems to prefer that we put all of our material on Canvas. Now, I don't have anything against Canvas. It's, you know, it's okay software. But here's the problem. You don't get to see it unless you are a registered student in that class. So that is a submicroscopic part of the people that I could be reaching out to. So instead, I said, enough of that. I'm not even going to be part of the Cabrillo website. I made my own website, and I pay for it out of my pocket, and I post everything there. So all of my courses, including my planetary climate science course, is published there. Including,
and the address is?
Well, if you just Google Cabrillo College Astronomy, I am the astronomer. I'm the only astronomer. I'm the only person in that department. And yeah, I actually found there's a couple of Google links that you could try. Shoot, I got too many note pages. I can't find it. Anyway, if you just Google Cabrillo College.
Well, I had dr-ricknolthinius.com. Is that it? I think that's
yes, that's
Dr.
my website.
Hyphen Rick, R-I-C-K, N-O-L-T-H-E-N-I-U-S.com.
Right. That's my website, and it has a bunch of pages. But if you Google EFI space econ space talks, then you'll find my latest works, which is the PDFs of the PowerPoints that I presented for the Earth Futures Institute. And they are on the economics of climate change, which has a lot to say about the bad, about how bad the more recent science is on climate change, and on the utter bankruptcy, frankly, of the neoclassical economists who run, who have been the dominant economics paradigm ever since Reagan. Those are the first three talks, and then the talk that's kind of closest to my heart and I'm most fascinated with is civilization is a thermodynamic system. And I gave that talk last October, and I've since been treating that PDF as kind of a work in progress, so I've actually been improving it, responding to a few questions that I had during the talk, and then adding more. I'm really interested to find whether or not this relationship will continue into the future and that there's nothing we can do about it. We don't have that proof yet that it will remain true on into the future. There's some thorny issues there that have not yet been addressed properly. Inflation is one of them. And it gets kind of wonky, and I don't know how far I should go into that. But.
So, are there other key things that you wanted to bring up? We have about 3 minutes till our break.
Yes. So, you've all been told, I'm sure, many times, energy efficiency is our path to solving climate
change. Right, I've heard that.
Right. Yeah, it's false. That's wrong. So, what energy efficiency does is it enables us to grow faster. And that's how we have used it, faster in all regards. In innovation for green, sure, but also in innovation for drilling for more oil. We've now got horizontal drilling, we've got fracking, we've got lots of technologies that we didn't have before, which have enabled us to continue to grow fossil fuels. So, in fact, oil is projected by EIA, the Energy Institute, to set a new record in 2023.
Oh, my.
And that'll surpass the record that it set in 2022.
Oh, dear.
Which surpassed the record it set in 2021. So all this peak oil stuff, you know, it hasn't happened yet. Someday it will. So it gets more and more expensive. It's true. And I don't know whether renewables are truly going to get cheaper. I think the larger the fraction, the existing work shows that the larger the fraction of our energy mix that they take up, then the more expensive they will get, the more difficult they will get.
You have another myth that says just ending emissions will bring down temperatures.
Ah, yes, that's a good one. So some people think, well, as an ordinary person, you're used to operating in a small environment where the time scale for change is rapid. But climate is a huge thing, and the time scale for change is therefore slow. This is just the unalterable physics of inertia. So you may think that I'm going off into efficiency again. Tell me exactly what.
Well, you've mentioned that the myth is just ending emissions will bring down temperatures.
Oh, right.
So more efficient.
I've got too many things in my head, people, so they start to crosstalk. Yes, ending emissions. So if we end all direct human carbon emissions, and way more difficult, somehow, impossibly, and all indirect emissions that we have caused, permafrost thaw, etc. If we end all of those, then what the research shows is that what temperatures will do is they won't go down, they'll stay constant. They won't go down, they'll stay constant. But if they stay constant, we're already at a point where Greenland is melting ice at
Alarming rates.
Yeah, there was just a new paper out.
I think you had
noted that as well. So all you're doing is slowing down the rate at which we degrade the Earth to a place where society itself may begin to break down, fraying at the edges of civilization.
Well, it's probably a good time to take our break. We'll just... So you are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7, many voices, one station, listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. And we're speaking with our bold guest, Dr. Richard Nolthenius, Cabrillo College Astronomy Program Chair and member of the Earth Futures Institute. You may learn more at dr-rick, Nolthenius, N-O-L-T-H, ENIUS.com. We will be right back after Jim Hightower's commentary titled, Take a Whiff of Elon Musk's Ecological Paradise.
Exciting news, people. Utopia is on the rise. Space Commander Elon Musk has announced that his magnificence, i.e. him, intends to construct his very own private town on 3,500 acres of farmland near his new Tesla plant southeast of Austin, Texas. More than a town, Musk explains that he will create utopia in Texas, promising an ecological paradise where his Tesla workers can live and do fun things like swimming, pickleball, and paying rent to him. The billionaire is certainly rich enough to erect his own Muskopolis, but alas, the Utopia name is already taken. Indeed, I've been to Utopia, Texas, a small town west of San Antonio that was founded in 1855 by, cover your ears, Elon, Swiss socialists. Of course, history shows that a company town is ruled by the company, not by residents, much less socialists. And Musk has made clear at Tesla, Twitter, etc., that his personal whims rule over workers, consumers, our environment, and even truth. Which brings us to that ecological worker's paradise he's promising. Even as one arm of his empire was extolling his vision of a Garden of Eden situated along the beauty of the Colorado River, another arm was scheming to pollute it. Musk is asking Texas corporate control regulators to let him use the site to dump 140,000 gallons a day of his industrial wastewater into the Colorado. Excuse me, but that turns Elon's ecological paradise into a fraud. Worse, it adds up to Musk pouring 50 million gallons a year of his waste into the river, fouling the main water source for dozens of towns and hundreds of farms downstream. This is Jim Hightower saying, Musk wants to extend the long sordid history in our country of company town hucksters, and his latest Texas scam is proof that we should never trust a billionaire promising us paradise. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
We're back, and we are interviewing our bold and impressive guest, Dr. Richard Nolthenius. So now we're kind of moving into the ugly. Not that the
Not that we haven't been there.
Right. We've been there. But what's next that you wanted to cover, Richard?
I'll do a little bit more science here. So one thing that people should understand that they don't is there is a radiative imbalance that the Earth is experiencing. We're getting sunlight coming in and warming the Earth, and then the Earth has to radiate back out into space the same amount in order to make sure that temperatures stay constant. But the imbalance, the rising CO2 and even just the existing CO2 and other greenhouse gases that we have is causing an imbalance. That was once thought to be about 0.58 watts per square meter. That was sort of the canonical number for many years. Then it was revised to 0.83 watts per square meter, and then in recent years to 1.2 watts per square meter. And the most recent number that I've gotten from James Hansen's work is 1.4 watts per square meter.
So what does that mean?
I should credit that to Hansen. I think I was actually a different author.
But, okay.
Yeah. So what that means is that each square meter of Earth is able to radiate back out into space 1.4 watts less than it receives from the sun. And of course, if you're getting more heat coming in than you can radiate back out, then temperatures go up. If you look at CO2 in the Earth, ever since the formation of the IPCC, there has been absolutely no change whatsoever from the trend. The trend has been rising exponentially. It's now going up 2.5 parts per million every year. It has been above 2 parts per million every year ever since 2016. And we're predicted to go into another super El Nino right now. And I expect it'll go up even faster. In fact, I looked at the curve just yesterday and I saw that it's spiking up. We may hit 424, 425 parts per million before we ever max out, which is typically around the middle of May. So our radiative imbalance is saying the temperatures are not going back down. They're actually still accelerating upwards, and we can expect them to continue to go up because that imbalance has to go back down to zero before temperatures will stop rising. I just don't see that happening. Our civilization requires that energy be spent continuously just to support it against the second law of thermodynamics. Now, you may say energy efficiency will lead us out, and let me explain now more clearly, because this is really important, why it will not. I've given you a kind of emotional appeal that, well, no, we'll just turn it into more growth. But here's the reason why. We only invest in things that will make a return on our investment. So what do we do with what we have, with our resources? Well, the first thing we need to do is invest in creating new energy sources. We need new energy just to keep going. If we stop all power, then everything stops and everybody dies and civilization turns to dust. So we need continuous new energy to come in. We need to tap that, and we need, so that's the first thing that we do. With that new energy tapped, what can we do? Well, we can grow. That'll increase profit, so we like to do that. We can invest in repairing what we already have. The last thing that we might do is invest in energy efficiency. why won't we do that first, you say? Well, the reason we won't do it first is because it will only pay off in the future. And economists have told us, no, we must discount the future. The future is not as valuable as the present. So that'll demotivate some. But the other reason that it won't save us is because we will not invest 1% per year in improving energy efficiency, as we have, unless we get back 2% a year in real GDP growth. Okay? So we're not going to invest in something that's not going to have a monetary
monetary return.
It's got to have a return on our investment, and not a return for somebody's kids and grandkids, because economists don't care about your kids. Now, that may sound harsh. I can back that up if we have time. I know we're starting to run down here a little bit, but so basically, what I'm saying, this is a new claim I have not heard made before, but that the rate at which we will invest, the rate at which we will improve the efficiency of energy per dollar spent will always be less than the rate of GDP growth, real GDP growth. But I just got through explaining that the evidence also shows that real GDP growth only adds to our energy needs. In other words, this relationship, the power-to-wealth relationship. So I don't see a way out within human nature, within what we have erected. The transformation that's needed is not little stuff like more solar panels or more wind farms
or
whatever.
Electric cars.
No, we need a transformation in human nature. And I have to smile because I'm remembering a few years ago when Nate Higgins invited me to a brainstorming session with some other academics up at UC Berkeley and so forth. And I offered my, you know, my contribution, and I had one word, just like in the old movie, you know, plastics. No, it wasn't plastics. It was CRISPR.
CRISPR.
And he looked at me and he said, okay, what are you saying? And I explained, so we need to change human nature. We need to somehow re-engineer the human genome. Now, I was saying that half in jest, but only half. I don't know. Will it take that? Do we have to actually be a different species? Because think of how we got here. Think of how we became the dominant species on the planet. It was natural selection that worked us over and over and over 6,000 generations to make us more and more efficient at exploiting resources and out-competing other species. And we've got this special way that we did it, which is the forebrain. I don't know whether nature made the right decision there long term. We may be far too smart for our own britches. We are too soon old and too late smart, to quote something on my grandfather's cabin up in the Russian River. That's what I worry about, that we're going to pass tipping points and wreck the earth for thousands, even perhaps millions of years, before we actually get wise.
Wasn't there also a recent paper regarding hope? There's another human emotion.
Good point. Thank you.
There was a recent paper on how hope applies to this topic. Tell us about that.
Right. So there's this recent paper. Unfortunately, I don't have it in front of me, so I don't want to misquote the author. But
the point, the
point,
bottom line.
Right, the point was that what hope has been seen to actually do is to just make us complacent. So I would challenge people like Michael Mann, who has said that people like Wallace Wells and Peter Wadhams and a few others are unhelpful. I would challenge that. I think what we need is a certain amount of panic. Mm-hmm. James Schlesinger, long ago in the 1970s, said, we have two modes, complacency and panic. And then he said, we've tried complacency.
I would add constructive panic.
Yeah, so we may end up with unconstructive panic,
exactly.
But that's what we would
we
like to avoid
panic.
By being more constructively panicked soon, before things start to break apart.
Yeah. And one of the things I also think is probably in the category of the very, very ugly. You know, we're losing 2 years with the Republican control of the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
Where nothing is going to happen to the level and degree that you're talking about.
I have something even more depressing, and
oh,
that is
okay.
Now, I want you, this is a little quiz for you people out there. How many oil leases were granted in the first 2 years of the Trump administration? And let's compare that to the number of oil leases granted by the Biden administration in his first 2 years. So who do you think granted more?
Well, I'm getting a sense, since we're talking about the very ugly, that it's Biden.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Oh, boy.
It's true. So it seems that we're locked between a rock and a hard place. We're fighting human nature, and we just have two sides of the same bad coin that are trying to do it in one way, mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. a happier face and a little greener, mm-hmm. but to the same end.
Then another thing that's happening, at least in the political world, is we have been under psychological terrorism probably for 20 years, because that's Fox News's business model. But more acutely, since Trump went down the escalator, because, you know, his inaugural speech, the American Carnage speech, it's going to stop now. And what we realize, it started then, the
right.
American Carnage. You add the psychological terrorism that we've been under with Fox News, with the grievance and the lies and the paranoia and the fear, and making that corporation that I think of as a psychopath, that corporation's business model, that we have a good third of the population just working not from the forebrain, but from the
right.
lizard brain.
Right. Actually, Jill, there's lots of studies that show that trying to talk reason and evidence with Republicans actually makes them dig in their heels and get even less reasonable. So,
is that the Dunning-Kruger effect?
No, the Dunning-Kruger effect is that you can be so stupid that you don't recognize how ineffective and incompetent you are.
Or you could be so bright and you doubt yourself. Isn't that the other side of it, that you are also very bright, but you doubt yourself as well?
Well, there can be bright people who doubt themselves, too. That's true. But no, the Dunning-Kruger effect, I would say, would apply to Donald Trump, certainly.
Yes.
But no, it wasn't directly related to this point. But you're right about the Republicans. And frankly, I have for years concluded that there's no point in trying to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't orient my writings mm-hmm. towards Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Republicans, to the extent that they've been in my life, have been leaving. and that's okay.
Well, the Republicans use politics as the art of achieving power. But there's another overlay to this, which are the evangelicals, where politics is the art of establishing Christian rule. And many of them believe in, where we'll all die and go to heaven. And
oh, the rapture.
The rapture.
Right.
And there's a whole book series of the rapture, and they actually want to bring on the
right.
earth.
Some of them think climate change is going to be the agent of that.
So of that rapture.
Right.
So, you know, we...
Yeah, so... This is why I think we should forget the come let us reason together approach of mm-hmm. some progressives. I don't think they know who they're dealing with. We have to find ways simply to route around them. One of the ways that I advocate is Occupy DC for Climate with 500,000 or more people.
Well, you're getting into our maybe talking about keep, start, stop.
Well, that's
so
true.
Why don't we break? If you're just joining us, our program today is Climate Chaos, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and maybe the Very Ugly. And we're speaking with our bold guest, Dr. Richard Nothenius, Astronomy Chair at Cabrillo College. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, Many Voices, One Station. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
And join KSQD this evening at 6 p.m. for Cats on Dogs, Insights for Both Ends of the Leash, with your host, Lori Katz. Lori is a certified professional dog trainer, and each month she welcomes another dog expert to offer advice to you and your canine companions. That's Cats on Dogs, today from 6 until 7 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org. Many voices, one station.
So we're back. And Rick, in these last few minutes, we like to ask what your ideas you might have for us. I mean, people are listening and getting pretty depressed. What could they keep doing, stop doing, and start doing as they may support your work or the Earth Futures Institute or
yeah.
what?
Well, I do have some start.
Good.
Ideas, which I can share now. Here's my number one for many years now. It has been diabolical what the IPCC has done for our education of climate. Imagine this. Imagine you're a scientist who tend to be on the progressive side politically. I mean, not all of them, but certainly many. And you are given this opportunity to influence policy. You can contribute to this great assessment report that summarizes all the great climate work that's been happening over the last 5, 7, 8 years. Would you want to? Well, of course you would. You want to influence policy. This is not just an academic thing. This is real world. But you've got to operate under these rules, and the rules are that nothing will be published unless there is 100% consensus. Now, if you're a scientist, you say, well, you know, I'm used to working with other scientists, and they want to get it right. And if two people disagree on what a scientific conclusion is, we get together and we hash it out, and we figure out who got it wrong, and maybe both of us got it wrong, and it works out. So, yeah, we would welcome the opportunity to educate those who, you know, might not yet understand. I'm sorry, that is way too naive. The scientists are out of their depth. They're fighting with back alley people, and they're just the goody two shoes, as it were. So, where does that leave us? Unfortunately, there has not been any change in the trends in greenhouse gas emissions ever since the IPCC came along. And worse yet, the latest conference of the parties, the COPs, as we call it, or COP-outs, as some of us have come to call it, was actually the oil minister for the United Arab Emirates, where this recent COP took place.
And is he the leader of the
yes,
current?
Right, and he was put in charge of this conference of the parties. So
the fox is guarding the hen house.
Well, that's about the kindest thing you could say. Mm. Yeah, it is absolutely absurd. So I say we need a messy divorce. The media loves a messy divorce. I call on the IPCC scientists to divorce themselves from the UN, to get themselves out of this veto power of a few right-wing economists and policy people and people lobbied by the corporations. Instead, you should publish your work, publish assessments. That's a good idea. And there are, of course, many good scientists in the IPCC, but there's also some poor ones. Publish those, but do them on your own. And don't insist on 100% consensus. Insist on maybe 95%, because you don't want to have a few climate scientists who might not be honorable to have the power to basically destroy it all. So that's my number one recommendation. My number two is Occupy DC for Climate. So I talked about that a moment ago, with specific legislative demands. So you don't corner a dangerous animal. You're going to get mauled. You have to leave it an out. But the out is going to be reasonable legislative demands. First among them, a 28th Amendment to the Constitution, which will grant rights to future generations and to the great commons of the earth, the oceans, the great forests, the atmosphere. Those need to have rights because those are the support mechanism for all of us and for the entire future. This is far more effective than what the progressives have been doing and what unfortunately, the Citizens Climate Lobby, who has good goals, but unfortunately their methods, I think, are hopeless. They want to talk one-on-one with their representatives. Well, I tell you, you're going to get lots of smiles and you'll get shaking of hands and you'll get lots of encouraging things and you'll feel better and you'll feel good for having talked to your representative. But you know what? They're not going to poke their head above the foxhole. They need their party to get reelected. And 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a half hour after you've walked out, they're going to feel that pressure and nothing's going to happen. And of course, that's what's happened. Nothing. There's been no carbon fee and dividend. And frankly, even if there were a carbon fee and dividend, I can talk about why that's ineffective. If we have a moment, do we have one moment?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So carbon fee and dividend, well, carbon tax is a good idea, but the problem is with what you do with the dividend.
Doesn't Canada have a carbon tax?
Well, they had a carbon tax, and they may try it again. The BC had a carbon tax, but it was pretty ineffective.
Okay.
It was instituted at the time that we had the Great Recession of 2008, 2009. People saw emissions go down, but what they didn't factor in was, well, what would they have done even without you know, this carbon tax. And of course, the carbon tax was not escalated as it was supposed to, as they promised that it would. Now, the problem with dividend, this is something Nate Higgins pointed out, and he's totally correct in doing so. When you take a dollar for dollar away from the rich and give it to the poor, of course, as progressives, we all feel our hearts warmed by that. And of course, you know, they've certainly gotten the short end of the stick, so I totally agree. The problem is they spend 100% of what they make, and they do it on consumption. And consumption is the most carbon-intensive of activities. The rich only spend maybe 10% or something like that, depends, on consumption. The rest rattles around in asset fields where the algorithms are out there stripping people like you and me of our savings while they get richer. This is the problem. That's less carbon intensive. I mean, it's bad for you and me, but of course, maybe if we get poorer, that's better for carbon. Ay, ay, ay. Let's not go there.
No.
Okay. But this is the problem with the dividend. If you really want the dividend, I think, to optimally work, it's going to have to be painful. Painful for all of us. And that means perhaps fund better science, fund better engineering proposals, and find a way to degrowth society to a point where we really can have an earth again, abundant with life and abundant with our fellow species that we share it with and with people that we can cherish.
I like the term that you use, the great commons, being the ocean and the atmosphere and the
great forests.
Forests, all that, because I don't even think most people understand the democratic commons, you know, that we come together in a democracy to provide commons here, the water, electricity,
right.
That sort of thing that we can't have on our own. We can't have our own electrical company.
You can't have your own air.
You can't have your own water. Those are commons that we need to protect.
Another thing would be educate. So unless people really understand how civilization operates as a thermodynamic system, I don't mean all the equations, but just the basics of it, I don't think they're going to appreciate just where we're at. And they're going to end up spending too much time advocating for things that ultimately are not going to matter. Stop. Okay, so we had start, stop, and keep. Frankly, I don't have a lot under keep. I would say keep funding scientists.
Keep your emotions positive. Right. We're talking a lot of overwhelming, very kind of depressing, but we just have to keep ourselves motivated to vote correctly, to fight for this topic, to help our family and friends that are Republican states to vote out the Republicans that they're electing.
So even though Jillens and Page have shown that there is absolutely zero correlation between the legislation you want and what legislation gets passed if you're an ordinary citizen. However, there's a super high correlation if you're part of the wealthy. Not very surprising. Even though that is true, you need to go out and vote. The first reason is it's easy, so do it, okay? Everything else that we need to do is really hard, so do the easy stuff. The only solutions really are going to have to be political. We're going to have to force ourselves to do things that are hard because we've gone way past where we can go. So forget about trying to do easy stuff and get off easy. It's not going to happen.
Well, and I think that what we can do is support the Democratic parties in Republican states that keep voting for the Republicans that get into Congress because they don't care about this subject. They simply just don't care.
They don't care. That's true.
And if we're going to have a government with people in power positions like our Congress members that just don't care, then we have sealed our fate. If we stop doing something, then they win. We have to keep voting. We have to keep figuring out ways to get better people into Congress.
I had a student, a friend of mine, relayed to me a day or two ago, being from Europe and being over there for a significant amount of time. And she says, universally, she got this reaction from the Europeans. She said, what happened to you guys? Like, what's going on over there?
I ask that question every day. What happened to America?
What happened to the U.S.? We're not making America great again. We're making it
terrible again.
The laughing stock of the world.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what happened to us is, you know, the money and the billionaires and the billionaires owning our Congress.
Yeah.
We have one party that...
Citizens United.
Citizens United and the two...
Excuse me, Corporations United.
Yeah, term. Corporations United. And the two previous 1970s SCOTUS rulings that gave, you know, more money. The more money you have, the more speech you have.
And not enough backbone in installing the Supreme Court that we should have under Obama. Mm-hmm. He basically just said, oh, really? You won't approve my... Okay, well, I wish you would. Yeah. I mean, how weak is that?
Not fight for it, yeah.
Not fight for it. So now we've got Trump judges everywhere, and they're going to last for decades because they're all young.
Mm-hmm. And a Trump, you know, dominant court. So, you know, we were talking about constructive panic.
Yeah.
To be honest, that's where we need to be. Well, Rick, thank you so much for filling in today. I appreciate you coming here overwhelmed, but I also don't want to give them hope because we know that okay, tell me quickly.
We should leave them some hope.
Okay.
No, we don't want to leave them with total despair.
So thank you, Rick. What's next on Be Bold America? Please join us on Sunday, May 7th, when we will be discussing Homo Ecophagus, the man who devours the ecosystem. Is humanity a cancer on the planet? The Anthropocene is marked by an environmental crisis so dire that it threatens to tip over into mass extinction. Over the course of its evolution, humans have evolved cultures and adaptations that have now become malignant. We will be speaking with anthropologist, physician, public health expert, and longtime environmentalist, Dr. Warren M. Hearn, about his new book, Homo Ecophagus, A Deep Diagnosis to Save the Earth, and what Dr. Hearn's new term, Homo Ecophagus, actually means. For this program, Michael Clancy will be my guest co-host. Michael Clancy is a frequent lecturer on climate change and currently serves as chair of the Monterey County chapter of the Citizens Climate Lobby. So please join us May 7th at 5 p.m. As a reminder, Be Bold America is available as a podcast and is now pushed out to YouTube. Again, thank you, Rick, for being here. And I want to give a big thank you to Be Bold America's program engineer, Eliza James, and our program director, Howard Feldstein. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for Cats on Dogs. My name is Jill Cody, and thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep stop start.